Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. New chairman of Senate committees and subcommittees could have a dramatic impact on your agency's oversight and the demands Congress makes of your committee. And the potential flip of the Senate from Democratic to Republican control looks more and more likely. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call and writes the Hawkins Here blog at rollcall.com. David says the lineup of new chairs would have more experience than people think.
I was expecting to see the wholesale turnover in the chairmanships because it's sort of a storyline that the Senate Republican roster is getting younger and younger, i.e. more junior, and that's in fact true. If there is a Republican Senate next year, 3 out of every 5 members, even if there's just 51 of them, will have been around a decade or less. And so I thought that that would mean a wholesale turnover in the chairmanships. That combined with the term limits for the chairman, which limits them to 6 years. And it turns out I was wrong. 8 of the 20 committees would be chaired by people who have been committee chairmen in the past, 4 of them going right back to the chairmanships that they had the last time the Republicans ran the Senate 8 years ago. Among them, Susan Collins at the Homeland Security and Government Operations Committee, is for sort of one of the most interesting ones. Jim Inhofe at Environmental Public Works, Richard Shelby at Banking, and Thad Cochran at Appropriations.
Some of the moves there are interesting, too, because Senator Collins right now isn't even on the committee, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. And when I talk to staffers and even some members of the Homeland Security Committee, Democrats, and said, who do you think you'll be dealing with next year as Senator Coburn transitions off of that committee and leaves the Senate entirely? The name I heard most often was Senator Ron Johnson, who is the highest ranking senator on that committee after Senator Coburn. Some other folks thought maybe Senator Portman. Nobody said Senator Collins.
Well, that's interesting. Well, my reporting and our with the help of my colleague Jennifer Schultes, who covers Homeland Security for a long time, said that Susan Collins has been dreaming of a return. That she loves these issues more than any other. This is really her favorite topic, and that she relinquished her seat on the committee altogether. But would have the right to reclaim it and to pick the number one spot, because the way the Senate works is, in a sense, it's zero sum accounting. They actually pick the membership on the committees all over again from the top. So they go down the list and they say, most senior senator, what do you want? And then second most senior senator, what do you want? And she would be about the 5th or 6th person to get asked and could presumably pick the top job there.
That's a fascinating reporting and probably really good news to people in the Homeland Security community, both in Congress, Democrats and Republicans, people at the Homeland Security Department, and people in the business community that serve DHS, because I'm imagining her and Senator Carper engaging in a much more collegial relationship, whether Democrats or Republicans hold the chamber, than I can imagine Senators Carper and Johnson having. Or Senator Portman, not known for a partisanship necessarily, but certainly, Senator Lieberman always referred to Senator Collins as his co-chair instead right. of as the ranking member.
No, this is right. This has been since the day that this committee got its new name and its new mission, almost 10 years ago now, she has been known among the Republicans as, you know, first among equals on this stuff. Senator Portman, the conventional wisdom is he's got other fish he'd like to fry. This is really not his favorite topic. I mean, this is not sort of what he's known for. There's also talk that he's being recruited to run for president, and so other things on his mind, maybe.
Your column is available through a link at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The headline, possible Senate GOP majority would be young, but would have enough elders for heft. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. And you're also writing about something that you and I have talked about a number of times, which is really, I think, magnified by the fact the Senate is about to go go out this the end of this week, as well as the House. And absolutely not only no progress done on appropriations bills, but the extended floor time in the month of July that Senator Mikulski, the chair of the Appropriations Committee, was supposed to have to get bills through, completely vaporized. What happened?
Well, it vaporized because she concluded, and Harry Reid concluded, and it didn't take much to conclude that it would be a waste of floor time because they couldn't get anything done, because the Republicans have now settled in for a strategy of using these bills to drive home their main point of protest about the way the Senate's being run, which is that they have amendments in mind and Harry Reid, the majority leader, won't let them offer their amendments. But also, as we discussed, I think the last time we chatted, there seems to be a pretty clear correlation between the Republicans' chances of picking up the Senate and the Republicans' interest in slow walking the appropriations process. In other words, with each new poll that shows that, now we at CQ Roll Call say it's a better than 50-50 chance, slightly better, but better than 50-50 chance the Senate will go Republican. With each bit of good news like that, the Republicans conclude that there's nothing in it for them to cut easy deals and go home, that they can just bide their time and presumably produce a continuing resolution without too much fuss that would last from the start of October through the election, maybe even until then, the start of the new year. And then if they take over, they can reopen the negotiations on all this stuff.
You are not the only publication to give the Republicans a greater than 50% chance to take the Senate this fall. And that's why normally, we don't do politics on Federal News Radio, but this is an important exception to that because the control of the Senate obviously determines the committee setups, and as we discussed a few moments ago, but it also determines whether we're going to see a continuing resolution. And it may determine, David, from what reporting you and your colleagues are doing and what I'm seeing from other sources, may determine how long the continuing resolution is. I've seen House Republicans now starting to talk about a CR to try to last all the way through to a lame duck session in December, and that just means the same tremendous headaches that agencies have had the last any number of years will continue again into fiscal 2015.
I think that's right. I think that's a right estimate. My own reporting is that the first CR would need to last probably up until right before Thanksgiving. Obviously, October 1st, the new start of the fiscal year, October 2nd or 3rd is when Congress is supposed to go dark for the election. They don't come back until November 12th, right after Veterans Day. Then there's just a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, so probably the first CR would last until right before Thanksgiving, and then the debate would be, if there's a Republican Senate on the way in, the Republicans are going to ask for a long CR to go into the new year so that they can reopen many, if not all, of the spending debates. If it's still the same divided government we have now, they would say, let's have a short CR and try and get it all done by Christmas.
I would not be surprised, though, I'm being totally cynical on this. I wouldn't be surprised even if Republicans take over the Senate. And I don't think anybody believes at this point in time that Democrats have a chance to take the House back. So if the legislative branch is controlled by Republicans come that November short session, we shouldn't necessarily assume that it's a given that they're going to be any better at getting bills done than the divided legislative branch that we have now, should we?
We should not, because remembering that, in an all-Republican Congress doing business with a Democratic president, which Washington last experienced, at the end of the 1990s with Bill Clinton, the word veto comes back into the vocabulary. We haven't heard the word veto much in Washington in the last few years because the divided Congress just hasn't produced stuff for the president to veto. But they would then need to negotiate a Republican House and Senate with the White House to split some sort of difference to get these bills signed into law and actually change policy. Otherwise, we're looking at a CR deep into next year.
And my memory skills and my Googling skills both fail me at the moment, David, but I seem to recall in 2007 and 2008 when we had the exact reverse with the Democratic legislature and a Republican president, we didn't have any more success in that scenario either, did we?
We did not. I think that's I can't remember the exact specifics at all. Starts to be a blur, but as I recall, we did not have any more success. It's been the appropriations process is Broken is a strong word, but it's severely tested at the moment.
We covered earlier in the program before you came on the deal between the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. It's between a $15 and $17 billion deal. Can we take anything away from this that, like we tried to from the budget deal that Congressman Ryan and Senator Murray put together, that this may lay the groundwork for some kind of collegiality, or is this really an anomaly because of the nature of the legislation and how broken people on the Hill agree the Department of Veterans Affairs is?
I do think it's an anomaly. I think that it is one of those rare cases where both sides concluded that it was in their best interest to get to yes on something before the August recess. The timing was right, that they were right up against this 5-week recess that they're going to start on at the end of the week. Fascinating to me that this deal was cut by two members of Congress who were about as stylistically and ideologically opposite as it gets. I mean, Bernard Sanders, the self-avowed socialist, lives in Vermont, was a carpenter, and a rabble-rouser from way back, and Jeff Miller, sort of a down-the-line conservative guy from Florida, who, is one of the Tea Party's favorite members of Congress who arrived before the Tea Party wave. The fact that they could get together on this, I think, just tells you that it's an anomaly.